Chatting again with the State Senator John Keenan of Quincy for Senate updates. Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Great show. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you again. It's been a little while since we got an update. Actually, it's been since before the new legislative session started. So you're underway now.
Yes, yeah, time flies. But it's great to catch up.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate it. Before we talk about any Beacon Hill issues, how are you doing personally?
Things are good. We're getting through the pandemic. I've received my vaccination, so I obviously encourage people to do that. There's a sense of relief that comes with that. And if I could just actually take a moment to encourage people to do something else, it is to make sure that they get back to going to see their doctor regularly and getting their checkups. And one of the things that I dealt with a little bit during the pandemic was cancer. And so I had a surgery a couple months ago, and everything went great. I feel great. Results are best I could hope for. But the key to it was getting to the doctor and getting that physical examination, getting all the blood work. When those things come up, they can be detected early and they can be handled very early, with much, much greater chances of successful outcomes. So I just encourage people to please, even though it's been off cycle a little bit because of the pandemic, when you have the opportunity, make sure that you go and get your regular physical, for all the reasons that we do it. And stay healthy is first and foremost.
Wow. Did you have to actually have surgery for that, John?
I did have surgery, yes, early February, and it went well, and the recovery was pretty good. So I'm ahead of the milestone, so everything's good. And the key was early detection, absolutely. And so and please go see a physician. It was prostate cancer, and again it was very early. And if caught early, it is treatable. And so I encourage people, those annual physicals show so much. Yeah, so please do them.
Thank you very
One
much.
step close to living to be 110, which is my goal.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That is the first I've heard of it. And I've known men, that have, in my life that have died from prostate cancer because it wasn't detected. So it's really very, very important. And of course, for women, mammograms as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that.
No, please, people, get checked. It'll save your lives.
Yeah, and I mean, they know how to do it to keep you safe, certainly in doctor's
Right.
offices and
Oh, absolutely.
hospitals. Yeah.
Yes. So.
Since we did last talk, you have a new chairmanship on the Senate.
Yes. Yeah. I was named the Senate Chair of the Joint Committee on Housing, which is I'm thrilled about it. Certainly an area of relevance. We hear so much about the shortage of housing in our community, in our region, and across the Commonwealth. It's a big issue, and all you have to do is see the prices of housing now. Then that indicates that clearly there's a shortage because people are willing to pay an awful lot for homes in this area and throughout the Commonwealth. So we have a lot of work ahead of us, and it just cuts across so many different areas. It cuts whether you're dealing with housing for homeless people, housing for people who are dealing with substance issues, senior housing, affordable housing, first-time home buyers housing, workforce housing, all across the board. There are great needs, and so I'm really excited to be on the committee.
Speaking of, you were at Father Bill's here in Quincy not too long ago to really announce the start of their new campaign to end homelessness, right?
Right. John Yuzwinski down there has really been out in front when it comes to the battle against homelessness, and his goal is really to end homelessness. And for so long, we have dealt with homeless by basically building four walls and a roof and putting a lot of people into those places, calling them shelters. And that's what we've had to do to keep people safe at night and to give them a chance to get out of the elements and to get a meal and a shower and so forth. But we found that it just doesn't solve homelessness. And so the real answer is supportive housing, and that's what Father Bill's is going to focus on, housing where people can move into a small unit, and once they're stabilized there, they're more likely to get to the doctors to go for physicals and checkups. They're more likely to be able to venture out and look for a job because they've got an address that they can use, and they can dress appropriately for interviews and things like that. And for those that have mental health issues, they do so much better when they're in a stable living environment. So it really is the best approach. And Father Bill's Mainspring has made a major commitment, along with the Commonwealth and the City of Quincy, to move in that direction with the idea of ending homelessness as we know it. Yeah. Great work by them.
Do you think there will be further help from the state in that regard coming?
So the state provides some grant funding, and the city has provided some funding as well. Father Bill's is going to have to raise $7 million privately to make the project work, but the state will continue to work with them on this project and on this model. And we're hopeful that it really does become a model for the rest of the Commonwealth. There's other areas of the state where they're attempting similar things, but we're hopeful that this will be something that others can look to and say, she's really working in Quincy, and something we should be doing across the Commonwealth. So yes, the state will be involved quite a bit.
Yeah, you mentioned the crazy real estate market right now. Bidding wars and homes going for way above asking price, and hundreds of people showing up at open houses. What is the cure for that on the state level? Is it just construction of more affordable housing?
I think it involves just a spectrum of things. Certainly, some state involvement in building affordable housing. And that's housing for people who are working and have income and just can't afford a $700,000 home in a neighborhood in Quincy. And the idea would be to get them into some sort of home ownership opportunity where they can build some equity and then move into a family home if that's what they want to do. So it is providing housing that is affordable to people. It's also increasing overall housing stock, and that will have a positive impact, as you make more housing available, that should hopefully kind of mitigate the substantial price increases that we've seen. And then, for instance, senior housing is something that we haven't focused on a whole lot in some areas of the Commonwealth. And that's important because it will allow people, it's part of the continuum of housing. So somebody who's maybe, 60, 65 years old, their children have left, and they find themselves in a 3 or 4 bedroom home and just can't afford to maintain it, or don't want to maintain it, or just feel like they don't need all that space, that they can go into some sort of housing, whether it's senior housing or, over 55 housing, but move to the next stage of housing to free up that home in the neighborhood. So rather than have 1 or 2 people living in a 3-bedroom house, they move on to something that they don't have to maintain and as much, and a young family moves into the home that they had. And so that continuum of housing is very important. So there's all the things that have to be done. It has to be really a comprehensive approach.
Do you think there are racial disparities, John, when it comes to availability of affordable housing?
Yes, there are. And it varies by region. One of the big issues is we just aren't building enough of it, so it's not accessible for everybody. Mm. But there's enormous racial disparities when it comes to home ownership across the board. And it's quite evident when you look at the studies that show people's net worth. Mm-hmm. Most of the net worth of white households is tied to their home. They were able to get into a home early, and that home has appreciated, and they've got a lot of equity in it, which is their net worth. For those that never had the opportunity because of where they lived without there being new housing stock or investment, they don't have as many home ownership opportunities, and so they don't have the ability to build that wealth through their home. For so many, their main source of wealth is their home. They buy it, and then 30 years later, it's worth something, and the mortgage is paid off. And if you weren't able to buy that and were constantly paying rent your whole life, you just don't have that net worth. So when you look at those net worth figures, I think it correlates to home ownership opportunities or lack of them in many communities across the Commonwealth.
Yeah. We talk a little bit about post-pandemic and how Massachusetts is planning to kind of emerge on the other side of this, hopefully soon.
It's a big unknown to some degree of how Massachusetts will transition from where it is right now to what it was, and hopefully what closer to what we really all want it to be, which is a Commonwealth where there's equal opportunity for everybody and the economy is doing well and there's access to equal education, all those types of things. But it's an unknown. So I'm on a special Senate committee that deals with reimagining Massachusetts post-pandemic resiliency. And last week we had our first listening session or hearing, and we did it here on the South Shore. And it was really fascinating to hear from people that are involved in housing and development and in small business to get their perspectives on what has happened and what they want to see next. And I'll just give you a quick example. DJ McKinnon from Atlantic Development was kind enough to join us, and he really gave us some insight into housing, because he's got that big project development up at the North Quincy train station and some of the challenges he's going to face, but also that he's still encouraged about doing business in the region and in here in Massachusetts, and is ready to move beyond and thinks that the development of housing will pick up. Peter Foreman from Social Chamber of Commerce had a very interesting observation about how people make decisions where they move. It's usually a function of, historically in this area, how far from Boston, which was the work center. And the further you went out, the less expensive the houses were, and you got a little bit more for your value. And then people weighed that. They did a formula of how far could they go out and still have an acceptable commute. And he said, with all this, the ability now to do remote learning, that formula it may not be applicable over the course of the next few years. Mm. So you may have people moving a little further out because they're only commuting to work a couple of days a week. And then in those communities, they may expect more. They may expect more sidewalks, mm-hmm. because they're going to want to get out and walk. They may expect more athletic facilities or passive recreation areas. They may expect more community shopping. So it's a lot of unknowns, but a great, great opportunity to reshape things as to, you know, how we'd like to see them for the next 30, 40, or 50 years.
Yeah. What do you think the state can do to support those changes going forward?
I think a lot of it's going to come down to first engaging people, getting their thoughts and their ideas. And then I think it's going to come down to thoughtful planning across all the types of things that the state does. Thoughtful planning in terms of education, thoughtful planning in terms of transportation, which ties into housing, thoughtful planning as to where housing will occur and how densely settled communities may be. Planning across the board on all those things. And it may not be evident right away. We may come out of this pandemic and things may look pretty similar to the way they were, but we should look at it as an opportunity to say, okay, how do we want things to look 10 or 20 years from now? In healthcare, we talked about some of the visits that I had with my physician were like this. They were virtual appointments, and they worked very well at the time that we had to do it that way. And so that will change medicine. And healthcare delivery. So much to look at and so much to plan for.
Yeah. Are there any future sessions soon that folks can take part in? Do you know?
The date for the second one has not been scheduled as far as I know. It was originally scheduled for this past week, but it was postponed. I don't know. They can go to the Senate website and check the reimagining committee, but I don't have the date for the next one. But it's in the works. They're planning it, and we're excited. I think there's going to be a little bit more focus on labor and workforce on that one.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. Any budget discussions going on yet on Beacon Hill?
There are. The House actually released its budget this week, and so that has prompted a lot of discussion. They're in the process of filing their amendments. The budget process is the governor introduces his early in the year. The House introduces and passes its budget in April. We will do ours in May. And then when there's differences between the House version and the Senate version, representatives of the two bodies meet to iron out the differences and present the final budget to the governor, hopefully by June 30th. So the budget was filed by the House, and it's a $47.65 billion budget. And the good news is that revenues in Massachusetts, despite our early concerns, have rebounded fairly well. And there's some expectation that we may finish the present fiscal year perhaps $1 billion ahead of what was anticipated. But for the next budget, the governor, his proposal was conservative despite those numbers. And the House budget, while it's it spends more than the governor's, it's still relatively conservative, very reasonable approach to the current fiscal situation. It still requires a draw from our stabilization rainy day account, and we'll be left with just below $1 billion in that account. But the good thing is, with all the federal money coming in, the House version of the budget, and I assume the Senate version, won't rely on that federal money to be balanced. That money should be used for one-time expenditures to fill holes, but for the continuous budget, the annual budget, the revenue will be as it has been in the past. So revenue projections are up, and there's a good commitment to education under the Student Opportunity Act. Local aid numbers are up. some communities have been impacted because of the pandemic in terms of enrollment for education. Mm-hmm. That's impacted their local aid, and we're working with those communities to make sure that we use the right numbers and to make sure that they don't fall behind in terms of local aid and Chapter 70. So that's where we're at with the budget. House will debate it soon, and then our budget will be released in May, and we'll debate it, and then we'll work out the differences.
Okay. What are some of the priorities in your district, Norfolk Plymouth, that you hope to advocate for?
The biggest one does seem to be local aid. There's a lot of uncertainty in the community still. While the state revenues have done pretty well, in communities that rely on, obviously, sales tax, hotel, motel tax, and those communities are still struggling. Braintree, they have a substantial commercial base, mm-hmm. and they have a substantial revenue source in the hotels that are up on Wood Road and elsewhere. And they have seen their revenues drop pretty dramatically. And so they're facing some budget cuts now. So as much as we can do with local aid, and then also with the federal aid that comes to the state to kind of backstop what may be happening in Braintree. In Rockland, that community saw a drop of enrollment in its school of about 74 students in its school system. And so the state used those numbers to develop their local aid for Rockland, their education aid. And yet 2019, the numbers were 74 higher. They dropped by 74, mostly in kindergarten and pre-K. They're seeing signs already that those students will come back for the next year, but the state is using that low number to establish local aid. So we're going to push, and we have been pushing the state to adjust that to make sure that they're made whole on their local aid. And the same thing with Abington education funding is key in funding for police and fire to kind of help with some of the revenue losses that they have experienced, and no different in Holbrook and in Quincy as well.
Sure. We talk a little bit, John, about the compressor station in North Weymouth, and after the third unplanned release of natural gas, an overwhelming response again to shut the facility down. Can you bring us up to date on anything about that?
They're still trying to get all the answers to questions about what happened, how it happened, how much gas was released, what was the timing of it all. Those questions are still slow in coming. The answers are still slow in coming. But it highlights, I think, that despite this being a modern, up-to-date facility, there are dangers inherent in the transmission and the compressing and moving of natural gas. And to have it at that location, every time I go down there, I see this just doesn't make sense. It's right beneath the Four River Bridge. It is several hundred yards away from Weymouth, and then just across the river from Germantown and Quincy Point, and also East Braintree is mm-hmm. just further down the river on the other side. It's just not a location for it. And each time you have one of these unplanned releases, it's quite scary. It just reinforces the idea that what happens if there's some sort of an explosion. And so there's still efforts ongoing to have FERC take which is the federal agency responsible for oversight, for them to take a look at it. We're encouraged with signs of them being more responsive than they were under the previous administration in Washington. And then locally, we continue to push as we can. The FRACS group is the most organized, educated, committed group of citizen advocates I have really ever seen. They are incredible, and they're pushing. And there's been some lawsuits filed, and there's been briefs filed, and all my colleagues in Quincy and Braintree have been great to work with, from the mayor's office to the elected legislative delegation. And I want to point out that Senator O'Connor in Weymouth has really legislatively been the person who's providing direction. He's done, and the folks in his office have done a great job. They just filed a brief in the case. We've all signed on. So he's done great work. And we're optimistic that if we keep at this, that station will be closed and the residents will feel so much safer.
Do you know the current status? Is it actually online or offline?
That's a good question. I don't know. As we talk today, I'm not sure what its status is.
Okay. Let's chat a little bit about the MBTA, if we can. And they took some heat, obviously, for making some cuts in service, and did a retake on those. Do you think that was a good move?
I think so. I know they saved some money in the process. And I know that they felt providing that service with the levels of utilization being so low, just didn't make sense. Some ridership was just down so dramatically. There's nobody riding the buses, the T's, particularly the commuter rail, the ferries. And so they reduced schedules pretty dramatically. They tried to still accommodate those that relied on buses and so forth, but schedules were reduced. They are now ramping up again. Ridership has shown an increase. I looked at the latest numbers, and it's definitely showing that it's trending up. It varies by line, but it's definitely trending up. And the challenge for the MBTA when they made the early decisions was making sure that they ramped up in anticipation of the demand, so that when the demand was there, you didn't have people sitting on platforms literally saying, where's the train? Mm-hmm. And then being discouraged about using it. But ridership is still down, and more people are driving. But my observations on the road and being on the expressway going into Boston is that it's reaching the point where I think people will be making that decision again. Is it worth an hour and 10 minutes in traffic, or am I better off just spending the 35 minutes, from point to point on the MBTA? And when they make that decision, having reached that critical point, the MBTA has to be ready. And I think they've recognized that, and they're starting to ramp up service and restore some of the lines and the frequency across the board and when it comes to the subway.
Yeah. Do you think it ever will be back to pre-pandemic now with all this, work from home availability?
Right. Well, that's just it. So, I think simple math is if people go to the office 3 days a week instead of five, and you kind of stagger with, align with days, 3 days people go, mm-hmm. presumably, it'll be 60% of demand if you do it in a balanced way.
Right.
And surprise, it may not approach it. But we'll see. We just don't know. I think, and I've had this conversation with the former Secretary of Transportation and with the general manager of the T, this is an opportunity that we should take and point people to the type of transportation that is best for the environment and make sure that transportation is frequent enough, affordable enough, and easy enough that they feel comfortable making that switch. So it's an opportunity, I think, and I hopefully that we'll continue in that way.
Yeah. Any talk as to when you might return to in-person activities on Beacon Hill, John?
No, there's been some discussion about that. There's still some concern. We have a fairly young workforce at the State House, and many of whom I presume, I don't know, haven't been vaccinated yet, but I think that people are generally getting vaccinated more. I would guess that we probably won't be back this spring, that we'll continue to work remotely. People are generally, the building's still closed to public, but people are in and out of the building a little more frequently now based on their vaccination status. For instance, I went in last week where I might not have otherwise. So we're starting to see a little bit of pickup in that, but there's no definitive plan yet. They're still waiting for, to get to the point where it is safe for everybody. It's an old building, and that means two things. The ventilation systems that are built into this building aren't that great, but that's offset a little bit because the building can be a little drafty. So all that is being looked at, but the discussions have started. I'm anxious to get back. Legislating is a people business. And as much as I'm out in the district a lot more now with the weather having changed and having been vaccinated and more groups are doing outside events, really at the State House, it's so much a business of people as well. And getting to see colleagues and, say, hey, you got a minute? Can we jump out in the hallway? I can grab you on this bill or that bill. Or even if you're talking about the Red Sox, just building those personal relationships, it's so critical to legislating. So anxious to get back.
Yeah. I know, speaking of people and outside events, there have been, some rallies locally regarding anti-Asian racism. There is some legislation, I know, to that regard. Is that something that you support?
Yes, there's been some talk about reforming our hate crime laws in Massachusetts. And they're pretty strong compared to a lot of other states across the country. But there's a bit of a loophole. And the loophole is that if there is some sort of encounter that at the beginning or at its initiation is not race-based, mm-hmm. It's difficult to charge for a hate crime that, for something that may be said or done during the course of that encounter. And the example that's often out there is somebody may get it in a motor vehicle accident and then, start yelling or uttering racial slurs or epithets, and there's no physical contact. It might have been a result of a motor vehicle accident, but it results in that type of, those words being said, which would violate the hate crime statute by themselves had somebody just, that had been the first act. Yeah. So looking to address those types of things, and yes, I would support them, but I think it just goes so far beyond that. We really have to look at the systemic causes of racism, and they're deep. It's very deep rooted, and we've got to address those. And I personally think the key to all that is education and getting people to step outside their bubbles, to engage with people. You know, it's easy to hate somebody when you only see depictions through the sources that you choose to have funnel information to you. It's a lot harder to hate somebody when you're out walking and you say hello and chat with them. It's a lot harder to hate a race if you know somebody of that color, ethnicity, or race, because you're talking with them in line at the supermarket, or that you're helping them shovel out in a snowstorm, or you've got their kids in a carpool. So we have to step outside our bubbles and engage with our neighbors and friends and beyond. And that's the key. I'll just give you a quick example if I can.
Sure.
I was out in Worcester this past week to go out and support the nurses who are on strike at St. Vincent's Hospital. And I was hungry. It was late in the day. And before driving back to Quincy, I thought I'd grab a bite to eat. And I pulled over at this little place. I pulled it up on social media, on Google Maps. It happened to be close by. And it was a hole-in-the-wall Guatemalan restaurant. One table, had no curb appeal. In fact, I drove by it the first time, didn't even know it was, I couldn't find it. Went in, and the story of the two men who own it, they're both from Guatemala. They came over here many years ago when they were 16 years old. Went to work. They finished high school. They've been working in restaurants, and they got word. They live in another state. They drive back and forth every day. Mm. They got word of this place being opened, and they're making a go of it. And the owners, both of them, they were as nice could be, engaging. The food was delicious, and just that exchange of talking with them about their history and how they came to be restaurant owners, it's a wonderful thing. And we've got to do that more often. People have to get out and engage and talk and learn. And I walked out of there on air thinking, this is the great American dream. These folks are making a go of it in the pandemic, working their tails off and smiling and laughing and engaging their customers. We have to step outside our bubble and engage in that way.
Wow. And you were able to learn all that in just a visit for a lunch. So
it was great. Yeah. That's what you love to see. That's the story of our country. And we've gotten away from believing that that's the story of our country, or believing that that's one of the greatest things about our country. And we have to get back to it.
All right. Anything else you'd like to share right now, John?
No, and we're just a quick up. We talked about the T, just a quick update on the garage project, which was a $64.5 million project. It's still ongoing, but the garages at Quincy Adams and Braintree will be opening on the 20th of April. So there will be greater access to a greater number of parking spots. The projects aren't done, but those garages will be opening, which is great. And that's kind of with good timing too, as traffic on the expressways pick up. And then there's going to be a return to service over the next several months as well, in terms of bus routes, frequency on the MBTA and commuter rail. And then just a heads up to people who may have been using the commuter rail from Quincy Center. We negotiated when they closed Walson Station for construction, and as they're working at the North Quincy project, we negotiated to have people use the commuter rail and pay only as if it was a subway, mm-hmm. cost of the red line. But those fares will revert to regular commuter rail fares. I think it's on June 30th.
Okay.
So the zone charge will change. And I just wanted to give people a heads up on that. So, but the good news, bad news is the fare will go up for commuter rail getting on in Quincy. The good news is that the Wallison station is open and has been and is doing great. And the North Quincy garage project is moving along. And that transit oriented development is really moving. And that will be finished relatively soon. So good things happening at both those stations. In Quincy Center, the planning continues.
Yes, I know. how do folks reach out to you if they have questions, concerns?
I'm sure the best way they can reach me by at email, john.keenan at masenate.gov, and they can get that email address from the Senate website. And they can also call the office at 617-722-1494. And Doreen in my office, who does great work, is on the line. And I just, if I can just take a second, you know, I want to thank the people who have been working in my office and in the legislature, but particularly in my office, for the work that they've done over the last year. It has really been incredible. They have helped so many people with housing and unemployment. And I'm so fortunate to have the people that work with me, Andrea Pestilano, who's my chief of staff, who just actually went on to a much higher paying job. But the new chief of staff starts today, Mark Sternman. He's fantastic, a lot of experience. As I mentioned, Doreen Bagout does an incredible job with the constituent services. And my legislative director, Morgan Simcoe, does phenomenal work dealing with the legislation and the policy. So a great, great group. And I'm so lucky to have them. And I'm so proud of the work that they've done on behalf of the people of Quincy and Braintree and Abington and Rockland and Holbrook. So I want to thank them.
Very nice. Always nice to be recognized, for sure. And John, again, congratulations on your good health and continued success and good prognosis in the future. And thanks for sharing your personal story about prostate cancer.
Get to your doctors.
We'll catch up again soon.
Great, Joe. Thank you. Be well.
You too. Take care.